This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, thanks for listening to this Joy podcast. If you like what we do and you listen to our podcast on a regular basis, it's time to put your money where your ears are. It's Radiothon. Go to joy.org.au, become a member, or donate, and keep us out loud and proud so we can make more of the stuff you like.
Broadway icon John Cameron Mitchell channels the essence of his glam rock icon, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, for one night only at Arts Centre Melbourne this July. So put on some makeup, turn up the A-track, and pull the wig down from the shelf. John Cameron Mitchell, July 10 at Arts Centre Melbourne. Book now. Joy sponsor.
Checkpoint Intimates.
Yes, and you are here with Checkpoint Intimates. We are your weekly gaming podcast where two members of the Checkpoint team go one-on-one and get intimate on a particular gaming topic. My name is Elliot, and this week I'm joined by Jake, who just gave me a really weird look.
I'm sorry, it just went, topic.
It was my intro. Look, I'm animated. I need to do weird things to make myself happy.
You realize animated means that we should be able to see you, right?
Well, my voice is animated. Look, don't question it. Don't question it.
I'm here to pick apart your life.
This week on the show, we want to talk about the concept of whales, which is not the marine life.
Oh.
We're actually talking about people who spend a whole lot of money on video game microtransactions. And the term whales has been coined for a while now. Just people who splurge out. They are the big driver of the microtransaction economy because they spend ludicrous amounts of money on microtransactions.
I'm just so surprised. I can't think of how much people would spend. I know that you've got some news about a pack you want to share, but it's just, how do people get the money for this?
Oh, that's the big question, right? And yeah, you're right. I do have some specific news, which is the reason why we're kind of talking about it this week, because Star Citizen, which is a video game, it got kickstarted. It hasn't released yet, but it has a massive following, so big that it actually has its own convention. They've continued crowdfunding the game even after the Kickstarter had succeeded. So they have racked in a whole lot of money, and they have a whole lot of player interest because it's this giant persistent space worlds where it's like a player-driven economy, and you can kind of do and like act however you want to act. Kind of think EVE Online, but even maybe a bit more ambitious than that. It's kind of crazy the things they're trying to do.
So it's sort of like they give you total freedom in a world that is
real. You're kind of like creating your own fleets of ships, and you can be a trader, or you can go and do like ship-to-ship combat, and there's intricacy there. It's really crazy. I was looking up some of it. But let's not talk about that specifically, because we want to talk...
Yeah, you've got news.
We want to talk about the Legatus Pack. I don't know how you're supposed to pronounce that. But Legatus Pack, which has been released for Star Citizen, which costs 27,000 real-world dollars.
God, why?
Think about that. You usually pay like $60 for a game. This is in-game content that costs $27,000.
This is like, what, halfway to a deposit on a house or something?
I mean, that's kind of where I'm at in my life right now. I'm looking at that figure of money and going, if I had that, the last place I'd spend it is in a video game.
That's more than my education is costing this year.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you actually get in the pack?
Okay, so they have said that you get 117 ships. You get 163 extra things like upgrades and skins, and that's it. So really, the Legatus Pack, what it does is it gives you access to basically everything you'd ever want in this game. So ships are a giant commodity. Spaceships, obviously, are a giant commodity within Star Citizen, or at least they will be when the game releases. And this gives you access to the whole range of ships.
That just feels like it's wasting progression.
Yeah, like, it kind of feels like that, right?
Purpose.
Well, that's a big part of the microtransaction economy. A lot of them, like some of them are just cosmetic, sure, and they don't mean much. But a lot of games are driven by progression systems, and you can kind of skip those progression systems by spending real-world money. And so Star Citizen is kind of, it looks like they're going all out, and they're saying, well, you can have everything, and this is what it costs. And the amount of money is ludicrous. Like, it's insane, and the idea that they sat around and said, well, what do we charge this? Let's charge $27,000. They must be assuming people are going to buy this.
I'm just trying to think, is it actually worth it? And do they have other packs?
Well, like, the answer is no. Obviously, it's not worth it. For any, like, logic-thinking, rational person, you would expect. They did respond, because obviously they got a lot of backlash. People were like, well,
that's just
money-grubbing, or there were a lot of players really concerned that, well, as soon as one person buys this, they can basically run the game because they've got access to all these things. It'll destroy the economy. So they've come back. They said, This is the statement they made. We were responding to what the community asked for. We have some passionate supporters that are not looking at Star Citizen as your typical game purchase / transaction, but rather a dream project they want to see happen. So they are looking at this as far as... This is what it reminds me of, kind of Warhammer. So you know there's those people who go crazy about Warhammer, and it's not just a small game for them. It's a big part of their life. And so they spend thousands of dollars on collectible Warhammer figurines, and they paint them, and they use them to play Warhammer games, tabletop. This is kind of how their statement rings to me. It kind of sounds like they're saying, well, our game isn't just your standard game. Our game is a lifestyle kind of thing, and people will engage in it to a ludicrous degree, and we want to help them be able to do that.
There's a difference between helping them to, you know, engage with it in their lives, making it a bit more part of their lives, and that's taking everything away from them, all the progression, all the goals, essentially.
Or even just exploiting them. Yeah. Because that's kind of what it feels like.
$27,000.
Like, they could charge whatever they wanted for this, but they chose a really expensive amount. And some might say, well, they're doing it because they can't have everybody buying this pack, because as soon as they do, it ruins their game, so they have to make it really unrealistic and only have a few people purchase it. But to me, it just sounds, it sounds greedy.
The second one person buys the pack, it is going to go off the charts there.
Yeah,
well, one person's going to be ultra powerful.
I can tell you right now, it sucks playing an MMORPG and have one person buy their way to power when you have to grind out to reach that level, and it's like, wow, that's so unfair.
Yep.
Like, and it kind of ruins those games for me. So this is something that I look at and say, well, now I'm just not interested in Star Citizen. Like, I might be interested from a distance, and I want to see what they're doing and if they can create something really cool, but it's not something I'm going to invest that much time into, because why should I when people can kind of cut the line?
It just seems like unfairness for the sake of unfairness. You pay this much, you're going to get what you perceive as this much back.
Now, the reason they're doing it is because of the concept of whales, which I'll bring it back to, because that's what we want to talk about. We want to talk about these people who video game companies know they exist, and they are people who spend a ludicrous amount of money on video games. Now, free-to-play games wouldn't exist without whales. There was some statistic out there, I saw it a little while ago, and it said something crazy, like, it's like it was 1% of the gaming population contributed to 50% of the microtransaction purchases. Now, don't quote me on that, because I just kind of made that up, but it's something similar to that in that realm, where it's like, okay, so there's a very, very small population of people, but they are purchasing so much in the way of microtransactions that they're fueling the entire economy. They're the reason these games exist. They're the reason that free-to-play works as a model. They're the reason we keep seeing loot boxes and microtransactions in every single video game, because even one purchase of a $27,000 pack makes it worth it.
Mm. Well, if you think about it, there are probably different reasons why people pay that much. Some people, well, depending on what the game is, of course, some people will pay it to speed up processes. So, for example, if they're the real-time-based games where this will finish in 20 hours.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if, for example, you're like a full-time worker and parent or something like that, and you're running out of time, you might think it's worth it.
Sure. If you're really invested in a game and you don't want to wait that time, then maybe it is worth it for you.
Mm. But if it's, for example, if it's just to outbalance everyone or to overpower everyone, maybe that's a bit of a deeper issue there. But it all depends on what kind of game it is in the first place. Like, for example, games like Simpsons Tapped Out, which is one of those city-building ones. It's the first one I played, so of course that's my... that's my example there. Don't judge me. I can see your face right now.
I hate that game. So much judgment.
I used to love it so much, but now, yeah, I don't touch it anymore. or even games like Pokemon Go, which have such a huge cultural following now that so many people have come into the player base. But now, because it's so competitive to get coins, you have to enter gyms to get for a certain amount of time to get coins, to be able to buy stuff. Because it's so competitive about that, people are buying coins when they can't quite succeed, in a sense.
Mm.
Or they're Like, for example, I had my first emergency situation. This is my personal story. Don't judge me again. I was in the bathroom. And something spawned. And it was a Squirtle, and I needed it. And I ran out of coins. Ran out of Pokeballs, so I had to go buy 20.
Why did you need a Squirtle so bad?
It was the start of, it was when the first game first came out, and it was still in, like, the whole hyper... I'm very easily swayed. We just discussed this before. Yeah. Come on.
Would you consider yourself a whale, though?
I am way too poor to be a whale.
Yeah. See, that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I look at video games, and I'm like... Well, first of all, I hate when video games... Like, if I feel like I have to purchase something in a video game, I just write off that video game as something not worth my time. Because if they're removing content that I want and making me pay for it, or if they're slowing down content deliberately and making me pay for it to speed up, then I'm like, well, screw you. Like, no, not worth it. But also, I'm far too poor. Like, I can see myself enjoying some of the things microtransactions give you. Like everybody else, I will deck my character out in an awesome skin if I really like it, because I like to be different and it's really cool. But I'm not going to spend that much money on it because I just don't have that much money to spend.
Yeah, exactly.
But obviously there are people out there who are fairly wealthy, and they can put enough money aside for video gaming, and it's worth it for them. So in the end of the day, like, is it wrong to exploit whales, or are you just giving people a service that they actually want?
I think there's an important distinction that has to be made here. There's microtransactions for things like microcurrency or part of the content of the game that is always available in the base game. You're just paying to access it earlier or to pay to access it at all, which is different from, say, for example, DLC, which is adding to the base game. So you've got to think... Does it actually add to the experience? Is it necessary? Is it making this game better?
Yeah, and if it's not, it's exploitative.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Things like the cosmetics side of things. Yeah, it can make it makes you look better. It makes you maybe feel better.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, is it going to enhance your experience? If you, are, for example, with Overwatch, if you're first person, you can't see your own character.
Yeah, that's true. See, I'm often in two minds about the whole whales concept. Like, I think, first of all, I think it definitely can be exploitative. Mm. I've heard specific publishers and stuff actually refer to whales. Like, there's been some, like, leaked documentation where they've been doing, like, talks, and they're, like, talking about how they can exploit these people. Mm. And whenever I see that, I'm like, oh, this is really gross. Like,
essentially, when they start marketing a game, start getting a game ready, they have to submit a game design document, which includes target audience, how they're going to market to them and everything.
Yeah. So they think about this. That'd
be where they put it. They have to.
Exactly. And I think it's important to note that whales aren't a, like, a random occurrence that happened after... Like, you release your game, you don't release your game with microtransactions and go, oh, golly gee, I didn't know people would spend this much. No, the developers at this point are well aware, and they develop their game in a way to get these people to spend money. So in some sense, yeah, it's absolutely really icky and gross, but at the other point, like, I look at other hobbies, like, say, golfing, or, like, some people are super into Lego, for instance, and you can drop thousands upon thousands of dollars into your any given hobby because it's what you're really passionate about, it's what you love, and you have exposable income, so you don't mind spending more money in those areas. And why can't video games be that as well?
I think when it comes to the valuation of it, like with $27,000, you could spend buy so much stuff.
Yeah,
for example, say for example you're buying 200 gems for $14. You could be spending that to buy another game. You could be spending that to do something else.
Mm.
But there's something about the game that makes you want to purchase that specifically. It could
For $27,000, you could invest in the company building Star Citizen. And if you're that passionate about the game, you can actually be, you know, part of the stock market and fueling the real world economy of the game.
Mm.
And it's just so odd that people are willing to pay that much money for in-game stuff for a game that hasn't even released yet.
That's still being kickstarted as well.
Yeah. That's... So we should mention that, to my knowledge, nobody's purchased this yet.
Didn't they only just announce?
They've only just, yeah, like 4 days ago,
so they announced it. So it's actually available right now, or has it not been released
yet? Oh, that's a very good question. I assumed it is released, but they might just be talking about it as a concept.
Yeah.
I wouldn't... stake any reputation on that, but I think it's released.
I just imagine that they'd have to get approval from somewhere to be able to charge these things, or to have there's some sort of rules on how much you can charge, because it just seems so ludicrous to me.
It does seem like too much. Now, here's the flip side of this. We've been talking a lot about people with like enough money to afford this and to like really drive their passion for gaming.
Mm.
What about the people who actually can't afford this, and they're the kind of people, like, you see them, for instance, in gambling addiction, and the same thing happens in video games, where it's so, they're not in a financial position to be doing this, but there's something addictive or something influencing them to do this regardless. What about those people?
Of course, this is why you brought me on, because yes. I'm the resident psych. well, essentially, it's to do with what's called the reward pathway. So it could be that it releases endorphins when we feel good, when something that is positive to us happens. So things like exercise releases it.
Yeah.
Chocolate releases
it. And sex.
It. Yeah, some more than others. It does.
That look you just gave me.
I'm just thinking, well, sometimes maybe not.
Ooh, the shade.
I was going to say chocolate, but okay, you had to work blue. but essentially, it's sort of encouragement to, yes, do this again. This is good for your body. This is not necessarily. This is good for your brain. This is putting you in a better mood.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people with gambling addiction get that constantly from, regardless of how much they put in, that moment of winning is what gets them.
Yes. So it doesn't matter that they spent more
on they don't like, think about the loss. They think about the win.
Yes.
And the same thing happens with people who play Fortnite and spend so much money getting cosmetic items for it. It's all about when that pays off and they look good. When they see the full outfit or their equipment together, that's when they go, this was worth it.
Mm.
And they don't think about how much was put behind them.
Yes. So even though it might be an irresponsible purchase, they still do it because it gives them that rush that they so require. And there are certain people out there who are definitely more likely to be susceptible.
Mm-hmm.
We've called them whales.
We've also called them potential addicts.
Yep, absolutely.
But it's also depending on why they're playing the game. Like, if they're playing it to escape from something or to release themselves from stress, if it provides, like, a mental benefit to them, they'll go for it.
Yeah.
So, basically, the more incentive there is to buy, the more incentive there is to play, the more cathartic it feels to play. That's how you get more people buying more things from microtransactions. And I'm saying more a lot.
So do we have to step in then? Like, does there have to be some kind of official body or somebody saying that actually this is inappropriate, much like gambling addicts? We need to do something to stop these people from ruining their lives.
If you've not been aware, the concept of loot boxes has actually been called gambling now. And it's being investigated, at least in Victoria. They are investigating it through the gambling
and a lot of other places around the world. Yeah.
So you have to start thinking, are these microtransactions, while they're not necessarily technically gambling, are they something else that we should be watching for?
I think that's the key. I think every time we hear the conversation about microtransactions and whales spending ludicrous amounts of money they can't afford, everyone wants to say, well, this is gambling, let's classify it the same way. Yeah,
but that's the thing.
It doesn't have to be gambling. It can be something just as bad, but it's its own thing.
Like, we get these, because these packs, you know what you get in them. It's not gambling because there's no random chance. But instead,
loot boxes have random chance.
Oh, yeah, loot boxes
sure.
You, but we're talking about like DLC
just
packs,
general,
and
yeah.
Microtransactions. You know exactly what you're getting. It's just, I would say they seem to be more as potential addictions in a sense. Mm. So maybe controlled the same way that content is controlled. Or, I don't know, I feel like this is going to be extremely hard to regulate.
It feels like it's one of those things that it needs to be continuously talked about, because in the grand scheme of things, it is new, right? Gambling's been around for ages. How long has microtransactions been around? 10 years? I don't know.
Yep.
Maybe a little bit longer.
Yeah.
But in the grand scheme of things, that's not very long, and we've got to figure out as a society what we do, because unfortunately some whales, they just get, like, their money just dried from them, and they're particularly susceptible, and I think it's unethical to target these people.
It's not just a financial issue, it's a health issue as well.
That's true.
In the DSM, they now have a section for internet gaming disorder.
What's the DSM?
The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, basically where every psychologist, like a psychiatrist, get like the diagnostic criteria for certain things.
There you
go. It's basically our Bible.
Gaming addiction, we made it.
We're a side note still, but we're there.
We're there in some capacity. Anyway, that's all about the time we've got for this week. Jake, thank you so much for joining me and providing your psychological approach to things.
It's what I'm here for.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we keep you around.
I'm the group psych. I'm the pet.
My name has been Elliot. We've been talking all about whales in video games. Make sure you join us next week because Checkpoint Intimates will continue going forever and ever.
Enjoy.
Bye.
This has been a Joycast of Checkpoint for Joy 94.9. If you like this podcast, please rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.